He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
James.
Chris Davis takes it to the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to another episode of the Walk On Red Shirts podcast. I am your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-hosts, Jake and intern Gibble. On this week's episode, we actually have a lot of news revolving around the start of college football this upcoming fall. And with a lot of teams going back, intern Gibble will clue us in on a bit more of that. A lot of news in that range. We'll also be doing our linebackers draft. We'll be taking five linebackers in this. Why? I don't know. We just needed to fill five slots. And this is actually the second to last episode of the draft. Next episode, we'll be finalizing it with quarterbacks and running backs, two quarterbacks and three running backs. And then we will leave it up to a vote to see who selected the best team in college football all time. Outside of that, let's see. How are you guys doing?
I've been eating a lot of hamburgers and hot dogs lately, mainly because I bought way too many at the grocery store and I'm out of food other than these frozen hot dogs and hamburgers.
Wow.
That's random.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on?
It's not a bad thing to be eating a lot now that it's getting pretty nice outside on a daily, on a daily basis. So that is a pretty good thing. It's time to, are you firing them up on the grill or are you cooking them inside?
Oh, I'm grill. And then yesterday before I was grilling, I accidentally missed some spots on my back with sunblock. So now I have some nice patches and looks like I have some tribal symbols on my back.
Ah, so now you're out there tanning.
Sure.
I don't think our listeners care about that.
Yeah. No. What about you, Gibble? Are you out tanning and grilling?
Nope. Been golfing a little bit, so that's been fun.
I was going to ask if you'd even been outside.
Yeah, I have. Played two rounds of 18, playing another one tomorrow.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah.
Maybe you could be Tiger Woods' partner next time.
Probably not. I don't think I'm that good.
A lake.
I mean, I think I could beat Tom Brady in golf.
I don't know. He had at least, he had that one really good shot.
He had like that one really good shot. And he had a good putt, but he was struggling a lot of the round. So I feel like him and I would be relatively on par. I think I could beat him.
Gib, weren't you on the golf team in our high school that like didn't win a single match?
Ooh. Tell them how you ended your season.
No, I won some things, but I ended my season by playing myself out of leagues.
And you didn't need to play in that.
I did not. I went to a match that I didn't need to play just because I wanted to, because it would be fun, and ended up shooting so poorly that I missed going to leagues by, I think, one or two strokes.
And after hearing this, I want you to go back on your statement you just said, where you claimed that you would compete pretty well with one of the greatest competitors in sports history, Thomas Brady,
that was
on the golf course.
That was 10 plus years ago, amigo.
I think I've
gotten better since then. I've gotten a lot better since then.
Part of me doubts that.
Well,
maybe slightly better, but...
No, back then I was shooting consistently like mid to upper 90s. Now I'm shooting consistently in the 80s. So...
Humble brag.
Yeah, I know.
All right, people are done hearing about your golf adventures.
Yeah, nobody cares about your golf. All right. Well, intern Gibble, why don't you get us started here with some news?
All right. Well, it looks like we have the starts to college football coming back, which is just fantastic news. The NCAA D1 Council voted last week to lift a moratorium on athletic activities starting Monday, which is tomorrow. that has cleared the way for voluntary workouts and training to begin at team facilities. Now, it's still up to each conference themselves on when schools can come back and everything, but the NCAA is kind of the first step in this whole process. So they've allowed student athletes to come back on campuses starting tomorrow. The Big 12 as a whole announced that their football team could start voluntary workouts on June 15th. For them, they also announced that cross country, soccer, volleyball, those athletes could come back on July 1st, and then the remainder of the fall athletes can come back on July 15th. The SEC is allowing football workouts to start on June 8th. The Pac-12 is June 15th, and then the ACC and Big Ten are kind of doing the same thing. They're both allowing the individual schools to announce when, or to decide for themselves when they want to come back. So for them, Nebraska's announced they're going to start tomorrow, Ohio State June 8th. UNC is coming back on the 12th of June. Louisville, I think, is the 8th. And Pitt was also on June 8th. And then Arizona was June 15th. So you're starting to see a lot of these schools coming back, getting ready for the college football season. A lot of these are going to start with voluntary workouts. They all have kind of their own different plans for everybody coming back, and then making the mandatory workouts. But this is a great step in the direction of college football happening on schedule this fall. So
good news.
Great news.
Fantastic news.
Yes. Very excited about that. All right. Switching gears a little bit here. The appeals court has upheld their ruling that colleges can pay for the NCAA athletes' educational expenses. The NCAA was trying to appeal that so that they did not have to pay for the education-related expenses. This was kind of covering the costs of computers, science equipment, and musical instruments, as other similar items. Obviously, there's limitations on what the schools can kind of pay for their student athletes, but to kind of reduce the amount that those kids are going to get would have been pretty shady for the NCAA. So it's good that that was upheld, so that the schools are still going to pay those student athletes for that. The Power Five conferences also asked Congress for college athletes for a compensation law, meaning that the school or student athletes can kind of go forward with working out how they're going to be paid for their name, image, and likeness. The NCAA wanted to obviously restrict that again, but the federal law, the conferences encouraged the federal lawmakers not to wait for the NCAA process to play out before passing a national law that would set the parameters for these college athletes to be compensated, meaning they want the federal lawmakers to make the decision and not the NCAA, because if the NCAA does it, then it'll probably end poorly. If the federal lawmakers are the ones that kind of implement it, it feels like it'll end up a lot more fair of an outcome. Did I say all of that right? Because that's kind of what I gained from those two articles that I read. Both were the general outcomes were the government should be regulating it and not the NCAA, because the NCAA continues to want to take away from the student athlete.
I think they want to go to the government as well, because they can have more of an influence on what it is then. You know, right. If the NCAA is in it, they can give input, but if they go to the government, they can almost just draft the bill and say, like, look, this is what we want. We just need the support from Congress.
Right. And I think that's what they denied happening. That's what the government officials have denied happening.
Yeah.
Which I think is good in the long term. I think that'll end up working out a lot better for the athletes. All right. So switching gears a little bit again, the College Football Hall of Fame, unfortunately, was vandalized yesterday during the rioting in Atlanta. The good news out of it is that it looks like it was limited to just the gift shop. So none of the attractions or artifacts in the Hall of Fame itself were actually stolen or damaged or anything. So that's kind of a positive in that whole area. If you've never been to the Hall of Fame, the first floor is just kind of the gift shop and like a little football field. So it's a lot harder for people to get up to that second floor and third floor to get to the stuff. So I believe they have a little bit more security getting in there. So that's kind of what helped them out with that. Let's see. A former Oregon football signee, Luke Hill, was arrested on attempted murder, assault charges. The state attorney's office charged him with a felony and first degree attempted murder, felony assault, and other misdemeanor charges after he allegedly fired a gun multiple times from a car. This would have been two Mondays ago. His intended target was a Rhode Island basketball signee, Ishmael Leggett.
Leggett.
Thanks.
I knew it.
You knew that was going to happen.
You said Ishmael, right? But you couldn't say Leggett.
Yeah, I just can't. Who knows? Anyway, he was standing in front of his home. Leggett wasn't injured during the incident, but Hill is obviously going to be facing a lot of charges for that and will not be playing football for Oregon. He actually didn't even sign up for classes at the university before this had happened.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah,
no.
Not great at all.
Not a good life decision. I believe it happened over a ex-girlfriend of one of the two. That was their dispute. So you'd love to see that. All right. And our last bit of general news here. Justin Ross is going to be undergoing surgery sometime in June for his shoulder. I believe he had some ligament damage in some stinger symptoms that had been lingering in his shoulder. So because of the coronavirus, he hadn't been able to go and get that checked out thoroughly, get the surgery on it sooner. So they've got that set up for sometime mid-June, I believe. Whether or not he makes it back in time for the start of football season or not is still up in the air, but he should be playing at some point during the season.
I have one more bit of news that you forgot or you missed. The NCAA is tabling the one-time transfer rule until at least the 21-22 season, so next year.
Ah, I thought we talked about that last week.
They tabled it on the 31st or no, the 24th, I believe. Oh. 24th. I just read it again. I saw it 1 week ago. They tabled it. So
gotcha.
They've officially tabled it.
Gotcha. That's not ideal. How's JT Daniels going to get his waiver?
Yeah. Go ahead with that one.
All right. So that's the thing all we had for the general news here. Aaron, I think you had a couple bits of info you wanted to put in here.
Two interesting articles I read in the past 2 weeks since our last episode from The Athletic. One, the staff did a survey of, I believe it was 45 NCAA football players anonymously, so no names or anything. But they asked them several different questions, you know, their thoughts on the COVID-19 and starting the season. A few interesting little tidbits I wanted to toss out there. Almost 80% of the players surveyed were comfortable returning to campus, even if their fellow students were not allowed to do the same. Some are worried that if it's, and I actually think it's the opposite way around. Some think that if athletes are on campus, but, or if it's only athletes on campus, that they wouldn't feel as if their health was being a priority or something like that. Whereas I feel like it'd be more of a priority to them if they had online classes for pretty much non-athletes, at least in the fall. But I do understand where they're kind of coming from with that. That was from a Power Five offensive lineman. They also said that with adequate testing available, they're not worried about the return to campus. And their biggest concern is really just what would end up happening if a player tests positive, which is an issue I feel like we don't necessarily talk enough about. Like, should a player end up testing positive and having to sit 2 weeks or something like that? I think that's a big issue with not just college football, but really all sports. But it does have a huge effect on college football. You know, what if Justin Fields gets it and has to sit 2 weeks? You know, a very prominent athlete, not just maybe a, you know, backup or something like that. And that's an issue that, I mean, all sports are going to end up having. But in college football, where one loss can pretty much take you out of the season and a chance for a championship, it could have an astronomical effect on this season. But we'll keep an eye on that. They also did a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being extremely uncomfortable and 5 being extremely comfortable. 0 players said that they would be extremely uncomfortable playing this fall. Only 3 ended up rating their comfort level with the return as at a 2. Of the 45 respondents, 24 of them said they'd rather delay the season than to play without fans. And a Power Five quarterback said that if it's not safe for fans, it's probably not safe for players. And added a group of 5 defensive linemen. I don't do everything I do in the summer to not have fans watch us play. If they said half capacity, I would say, let's do it. So interesting responses coming from the players. They all seemingly want to be there. And it does seem as though we're going to have some fans, whether it's half capacity, 3/4, 1/4, whatever. It doesn't seem as though we're not going to end up having fans in the fall at this moment, but who knows. But that was an interesting one. Another one was revolving around fans in the stands. And should these schools end up having 50% capacity, 30% capacity, whatever, athletic departments seemingly have been working you know, tirelessly to map out ways to get the most people in the stadium while also kind of following state orders on the COVID-19, you know, 6-foot rule and social distancing and all that stuff. But one big issue is also where those tickets end up going. If it's, you know, 30 or 40% tops, you're going to see boosters, alumni and stuff like that ending up getting tickets first, probably. And it's going to be a trickle down effect. So if you don't necessarily have a tie into the university, you're going to be pretty much last on that list of people getting those tickets. You're probably not going to see anything or much on the second hand markets like Ticketmaster or StubHub, all those things. Just because they're going to have to limit the way they do that so that people can't mark up prices and stuff like that astronomically to sell those tickets. So should we not have full stadiums this coming fall? It does seem as though getting tickets to games might be a little tricky. It really depends on what ends up happening with state laws going forward. But something else to keep an eye on in case you were planning on going to a game is to look and see what the availability is going to end up being, especially for your local teams, and how easy it's going to be to get those tickets.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
I feel like the secondhand markets aren't going to be a thing. Like, I don't know when you're restricting you're going to have to buy them through the original ticket seller just because of the social distancing aspect.
Well, you're going to see every school is going to end up going fully digital in the fall. You're not going to have full regular tickets.
Right.
And it is going to be interesting because I do think schools are going to have to put limits on reselling ability to prevent that. And that's something a few athletic directors that were in that mentioned in the article specifically brought up, is that they don't want to see, you know, them give tickets to a booster and, you know, their family of five or however many people they're allowed to bring. And then seeing those tickets end up being resold for, you know, twice what the normal value is or something like that, you know, marking up tickets pretty high just to make a penny based on limited availability. So there's a lot that athletic directors are currently having to deal with, specifically related to just getting fans into the stands this fall, let alone everything else. So
yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. All right. Well, we'll switch over to the transfer portal now. First name on my list here is Jack Sears, quarterback from USC, is transferring to Boise State. He's going to be a grad transfer with two seasons remaining. At the beginning of last season, he was going to be fourth on the QB depth chart for USC. So that's part of why he entered the transfer portal. But he did decide to finish his undergrad degree at USC, so that's why he ended up staying there through the actual football season. Also from USC is JT Daniels, as I kind of mentioned before. He's officially transferring to Georgia. He has 3 years of eligibility remaining, but would need to get a waiver to compete with Newman for the starting job this coming season.
Does anybody believe he's not getting the waiver?
No.
No, I mean, if he wants the waiver, I feel like they'll give him the waiver. Hey, I mean, Kirby Smart with multiple talented quarterbacks on his roster. What could go wrong?
Like, he fits the absolute thing. He's a high profile quarterback transferring to a top tier program in a Power Five conference. Look, I know they have Newman. I actually put a question out when the last time people got denied waivers. There were four from last year, but when you compare it to how did Tate Martell get a waiver, I'm sure they can figure out a way to say JT Daniels, some injury, blah, blah, blah. Look, now you're eligible at Georgia.
Yeah.
So but maybe he starts this fall. I don't know. If I'm Jamie Newman, I'm not happy.
Right. I feel like Jamie Newman, he's getting screwed over in that situation, but I still thought he was kind of the better quarterback. He's got a little bit more on his resume than Daniels does.
I had a conversation with a couple of Georgia people saying that he shouldn't even apply for the waiver. I said, no, he should, because even if he loses to Newman, he played half of a game last year. That means he's not playing at all this year. You're going to go almost two complete seasons without playing a snap. Like, he needs to at least be on the field in those scrub games, getting some snaps, getting on the field, doing that. And they said he can do that in practice. Practice and games are totally different.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, anybody who transfers should be putting a waiver out there. I mean, quite frankly, whether it gets denied or not, I mean, maybe isn't an issue, but, yeah, I mean, he should absolutely do that. You know, and if it gets denied, whatever, you redshirt the season and then you start the year after, or you compete with one of their other quarterbacks that are coming in. So yeah, I mean, if you're in that situation, we'll kind of see. It is kind of interesting because Georgia is not a school I necessarily thought would end up bringing in JT Daniels.
I think we all sat here and thought he was going to stay on the West Coast. He went completely opposite from that.
He bet on himself. I'll give him that. I mean, he's kind of taking the little idea of the Joe Burrow aspect of, like, I'm going to bet on myself, and I do great there, I'm going to, you know, be crowned as a hero and, you know, a top pick. So credit him for that, rather than just saying, like, I'll go to Arizona or I'll go to Oregon State or Washington or something like that.
Yeah, definitely a bold move, but it could pay out pretty well for him in the end. All right. Another transfer we have is Kalen Newton, brother of Cam. He is following in his brother's footsteps and transferring to Auburn from Howard University. He's going to be there with 2 years of eligibility remaining and can play immediately for the Tigers as a grad transfer. He's transferring as a preferred walk-on with a rumor that he could be working at wide receiver. So that would be interesting to see.
Following his brother's footsteps, like you mentioned. Also, the name sounds familiar. He was a quarterback for Howard when they had the 45-point upset over UNLV a couple years ago. So that's probably where you know the name from if you've heard it before.
All right. We also have former Mississippi State defensive back Jerrion Jones announcing that he's transferring to Ole Miss. So that's a fun little add-on for the Egg Bowl. he is still going to have 3 years of... What?
I didn't know that was legal.
No, I don't think it is. But, you know, he's doing it, so he's just pissing everybody off. So he's still going to have 3 years of eligibility left. He could use his red shirt this coming season if he decides not to pursue a waiver for immediate eligibility. But like you guys said, it'd be kind of silly for anyone not to pursue that just because sitting out for a full year and not doing anything doesn't feel like a good time.
Interesting move for sure.
yeah.
Going from one rival to one rival to another.
Yeah. He also added a little bit of fuel to that fire. Somebody asked him during his recruitment what his commitment percentage was that week. Jones replied by saying the percentage of bowl games Ole Miss played in last year.
Oh, geez.
Say that again.
He said, that somebody asked him what his commitment percentage was. And he responded the percentage of bowl games that Ole Miss played in last year.
So does that mean 0%?
Yeah,
I think so. So that's
weird.
This could be a fun one to watch. All right. Next up, we have former Stanford running back Trevor Spates officially committing to Notre Dame as a grad transfer. He is going to have 2 years of eligibility remaining. And we have Nebraska defensive back Henry Gray. He just entered the transfer portal. He was enrolled at Nebraska in January. He said he had unforeseen circumstances with family that came up, which is why he's transferring. He is from the Miami area, so maybe he's going to go back to Miami. We'll see. I don't know too much more about that one.
Yeah, I saw it pop up on Twitter this week that he was transferring, and I just knew that he was a recent enrollee. So I looked it up from Miami area, so I feel like he could end up at one of the Florida schools, whether it's University of Miami or one of the directional Atlantic, Pacific, coastal. Who knows?
Yeah,
I do believe he was a guy that Miami went after for a while last recruiting period. So who knows? He could end up back as a Hurricane or could go to Florida Atlantic, Florida International, one of those schools. But a four-star recruit, so, I mean.
He'd be a good addition for Miami then.
Should have some suitors for his services.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Our last bit of portal news here. Former five-star recruit Anthony Alfano has left Colorado. This kid was the fifth best recruit in his class last year. Went to Alabama, transferred from Alabama and to Colorado, and now he's leaving Colorado. He's kind of had a bunch of different off the field issues, disobeying team rules, and I think a little bit of academic issues as well. Whoever gets him is getting a lot of talent, but also a lot of a basket case. This kid went to three different high schools in 4 years. So this is now going to be his sixth school in 6 years. That's a lot.
Yeah. You play the whole risk reward thing right here.
Yeah. A lot of talent. You have no idea what he's going to do off the field. So that's an interesting one for sure. So we'll keep an eye on where that kid ends up.
But when he left Alabama, they said it was something to do with like his grandma being sick or a family member being sick. He was from the DMV area and then he transferred to Colorado. So that whole thing didn't make sense to me either because he got even further away.
Yeah. I think I read that Saban did not have great words for him when he left. At first he said he kind of disappeared a little bit, but then he kind of launched into an oral dissertation about failing to confront and learn from one's mistakes. So You really have no idea.
If I remember, he went not necessarily go missing, but like he just like stopped showing up to like practices or something like that for a little while. It was a weird, weird situation.
Hadn't attended classes or practices for a bit. And they say it's because of his ailing grandmother. But really have no idea. Maybe now he'll transfer back to the DMV area. I guess we'll find out.
End up at Hawaii.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, yeah, I guess we'll keep an eye on that. Figure out. Former top prospect, so
yeah,
talent's there. Can he put it on the field? Can he get on the field?
That's the biggest.
Does he want to be on the field?
Can he find a field?
Yeah, I mean, 10,000 questions.
All right. Well, that's all we've got for news this week.
All right, Jake, I'll send it over to you for an ad read.
Yeah. So, Gibble, I know that you're excited to get some Smack apparel, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. You're excited because although they didn't have some Arizona State stuff like you were hoping for, but maybe they'll have some soon. But when they do, you can use promo code WALKON because Smack Apparel is the leading unlicensed college and sports apparel company in the United States. Because for over 20 years, Smack has designed its most iconic and memorable rivalry gear from the anti-hurricane Sex to Be You and Nationals' Briceless design. You're guaranteed to get a compliment at your next tailgate if there is a tailgate, or you might just get a compliment in your own house. Unlike licensed sports apparel, Smack doesn't need approval from teams or organizations. They create the designs that illustrate how diehard fans are feeling. So if you're tired of wearing just a basic logo or generic jersey, check out smackapparel.com and use promo code WALKON, one word, for 20% off your next order.
All right. Sounds good. We are getting our Smack Apparel shirt soon, so can't wait for that. We'll show them off.
I think I'm getting the Rock Chalk drink on, or drink up. I forget exactly what it says.
Boo. Also, real fast, before we get into this draft, I just want to say how disappointed I am in our listeners for giving intern Gibble a good second team. We set it up perfectly. There was teams like Bowling Green, boring-ass Cincinnati, Wyoming. It was
Texas State.
Texas State was in there. And you people gave him Arizona State, a fun school, a fun coach. I am disappointed immensely. What has intern Gibble ever done other than mispronounce everybody's name on this podcast and wait 1 week before he completes a graphic?
You know, we should have gave him a team with like a dog mascot. Seeing as how much he loves dog ice cream.
No, I'm good.
We should have just done. Yeah, we shouldn't have left it up to other people. We should have just picked the teams ourselves, and they should have all been teams with dog mascots.
We could have done a whole episode on that.
None of you picked Yale,
Gardner Webb, like teams like that.
Tennessee still would have been in there, so that's good.
Yeah, I don't think we would have allowed you to have been a Tennessee fan.
God, no. Not with Coach Doug's there. No, it makes it too fun. It's all about making.
I think I had Old Smokey as one of my mascot picks back in the day.
You probably did.
I really don't care.
Actually, we picked all the dog mascots, I'm pretty sure. I could have been a Georgia fan.
No.
I mean, if you want to be that close to, if you want to be sitting on heartbreak every year, then yeah, go be a Georgia fan.
No, I'm good.
All right. Let's get the linebacker draft started. Same as every week. We're picking five each. This week it's going to go Jake, intern Gibble, then myself, and then snake order from there on out like normal. So Jake, great week to have the first pick.
Yeah, this was an awful week to have the first pick. So when you guys steal everybody on my board, I'm going to be really, really mad again. So for my first pick, I struggled with this for a long time. I literally have seven names up here and I could pick any single one of them first, but I'm going to start with LeVar Arrington from Penn State. I feel like this is a decent pick. I mean, LeVar Arrington was one of the greatest linebackers in Penn State history for a school that's labeled Linebacker U. You know, he was a two-time All-American, won the Buckus, Benaric, Lambert Awards, and finished ninth in the Heisman. And I believe he had 19 sacks and 38 tackles for a loss in his Penn State career. Ended up being drafted second overall, has the iconic LeVar leap when it was a fourth and short, and he completely hurdled the line. So we'll start with LeVar Arrington.
I love that pick because I had LeVar Arrington number 14 on my big board.
Yeah, so. I had him a good bit down.
I love it.
I really wanted to help me.
He was a co-defensive player of the year. He was 2-time All Big Ten. Like, he has the accolades to be up there.
I penalized him for being a co-Big Ten player, defensive player of the year.
I don't understand how he was co when he was 9th in the Heisman and won every linebacker award. Like, who else was there?
All right, intern, what you got? See,
I was really hoping you would take one of my first two just so I didn't have to make the decision between them. We're going to go with Luke Kuechly with number two. Winner of the...
He's not even on my board.
Really? That's wild.
I have him number 8.
Wow. I guess I overdrafted. Oh, well. Worse things have happened. He won the Nagurski Trophy, Butkus Award, Lombardi Award, Lott Trophy, all in the 2011 season. Was a 2-time consensus All-American, Defensive Rookie of the Year in the ACC, and 3-time first team All ACC in his time at Boston College. So, yeah, Luke Kuechly.
All right, I have another week comes that I have my number one and number two on the board. I feel like this is every week, regardless of where I pick. Number one, the Boz, Brian Boz.
Oh, gosh.
Oklahoma.
I thought taking him one was too high.
1986 Heisman finalist, 2-time Butkus Award winner, 2-time unanimous All-American, 3-time All-Big Eight, College Football Hall of Famer, one of the most known and renowned linebackers in the history of college football. And number two, we joked about this before we recorded about grabbing coaches. So I'm also going to get a coach here as well as a starting linebacker, Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern. 2-time Nagurski Award winner, 2-time Bednarik Award winner, 2-time consensus All-American, 2-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, not a co-defensive player of the year. He won them outright. College Football Hall of Famer and current head coach at Northwestern University. So those are my first two selections.
Well, I feel like you guys are either going to love or hate this one. Probably hate. We're going to take Manti Te'o, number two.
I had a number three on my board, so hey. I like that pick. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
Are you taking his girlfriend, too?
Here we go with the jokes. I hate Notre Dame just as much as everyone else, but I'm over the jokes.
I'm not.
We're talking 8 years ago now, so I'm good on the jokes. Being a Heisman runner-up and losing to Johnny Football, I think he's pretty good. Ended up also winning the Maxwell Award, Lott Trophy, Bednarik Award, Walter Camp Award, Nagurski, Butkus, Lombardi, unanimous All-American. Just name the trophy, he won it. Just a great player all around, except for the fact that he had to play at Notre Dame. That's kind of
I mean, the most decorated single season in history for a linebacker. He literally won every award out there pretty much. I mean, and the Maxwell Award, which typically goes only to a running back or a quarterback, much like the Heisman. Like you said, Walter Camp as well. So, I mean, a great season. Heisman runner up, like you said. I had a number three on my board. I was sort of hoping Boz or Fitzgerald would be gone so I could grab him. But yeah, that's a great pick.
So apparently in 1998, Tom Burke was the other co-defensive player of the year because he had 22 sacks for Wisconsin.
I don't even know who that is. Oh,
I know.
Wisconsin. Okay.
He had 22 sacks and set the Big Ten regular season. He holds the Big Ten record for most sacks in a single season with 22. So
alrighty.
That would make sense. So my next pick, I'm going to go old school. I'm going to take Dick Butkus here. Because Dick Butkus played at Illinois, finished 6th in the Heisman voting in 63 and 3rd in 64. Rare for a defensive player at all. completed his career with 378 tackles. And his last two seasons, he had 145 in 63 and 132 in 64. Voted the Big Ten Most Valuable Player, two-time consensus All-American, and has his number retired by the Fighting Illini, and did a bunch of good stuff in the NFL then too.
All right. Didn't even have him on my board.
Yeah. Well, you know, apparently we all disagree on everything today.
We are very drastically different on everything, I guess, except Manti Te'o for Gibble and I, at least.
So I had him, but he was way down.
My next one, man, this sucks. I don't like this act at all.
Finally gets the number one pick, complains.
Yeah, I don't like this draft.
Can't make me happy ever.
We're going to go EJ Henderson from Maryland.
All right.
We'll say didn't who.
Didn't even have him on my board again.
Name. He holds the NCAA record for career tackles in a game, or career tackles per game, season unassisted tackles with 135, career unassisted tackles per game with 8.8. First team ACC twice as the All-ACC Defensive Player of the Year, two-time consensus All-American. As a senior, he was the Buckus and Benarik, and was the ACC Player of the Year as a junior. So he won a lot of awards, but obviously he didn't do a ton in the NFL. But at Maryland, he's one of the greatest defensive players they ever had.
All right, let's see. My third pick. Let's go.
Before you make your pick, I just want to point out that Jake's current, this is how far different we are on all this. Jake's current three picks he has selected were number 14 and two guys that weren't even on my board.
Wow.
Well, now I don't feel bad about my list because I feel confident about getting players I wanted.
See, I just kind of reordered my people based on who knows what. I have no idea. I'm just picking people that seemed like they had pretty good careers. So next pick, I'm going to take Dana Howard from Illinois. College football.
He's the only people we can take it.
Yeah. I mean, they had good linebackers. Yeah. College football Hall of Famer, all Big Ten twice, two-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, two-time first team All-American, won the Buckus Award and Jack Lambert Award. Overall, just a stud for Illinois.
Not on my list.
Not on mine either. I got to sit here and say, I love this draft. I'm going to go ahead and rep the podcast on these next two picks. Next, I'm going to take Dan Morgan, Miami, 2000 unanimous All-American, all Big East, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, and also won the Buckus, Nagurski, and Benarik Awards that season. One of the best players in Miami history. Is actually currently in the front office of the Buffalo Bills, played for the Carolina Panthers for a decent period of time in the 2000s. So Dan Morgan is my number three linebacker, and number four, we're going to go to Ohio State and take James Laurinaitis. 2008 Lott Trophy, 2007 Buckus Award, 2006 Nagurski Award. Very impressive to win three major awards in three seasons. Two-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, not co-defensive player of the year either time. Should mention that. Also didn't have to compete with somebody for 22 sacks. So maybe that's why. Three-time consensus All-American, three-time first team All-Big Ten, James Laurinaitis, linebacker number four for me.
Okay, let's see. I think we're going to just go off the beaten path here. We're going to take Mike Singletary.
Good pick.
Yeah. Baylor.
I actually had a number four on my board, but I skipped him.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, he has the record for tackles in a season, unofficial record, because they didn't really keep defensive stats before like 2000. He had 232 tackles in the 1978 season. Two-time Southwest Conference Player of the Year. Two-time consensus All-American, two-time Davey O'Brien Memorial Trophy. And the Bart Starr Award, and also a College Football Hall of Famer. So a overall pretty good career.
All right, I'm just going to say screw this. I'm going Homer picks these last two because why not? Screw it. All right, I'm taking Chris Spielman with my next one. I figured that's the one that...
Hey, guy, that's on my board.
Yeah, I'm taking Chris Spielman. Led the team in tackles in 86 and 87. Also holds the record for most tackles in a game with 29 against Michigan. Great game for him to do that too. Three-time All-Big Ten, two-time All-American. Also won the Lombardi Trophy. Has a school record of 283 solo tackles and in 86. And then in the following year, he had a season record of 105 solo tackles as well. He was also two-time Big Ten champion and was a defensive MVP as a senior. And then my other one is we're going to go Homer again because why not? We're going to take Tom Cousineau, also from Ohio State. Tom Cousineau averaged 17.5 tackles a game when he was an All-American as a senior, I believe, where he ended up having the single season record with 211 tackles in a season, which is absolutely absurd. He also had tied Chris Spielman with 29 tackles in a game, College Football Hall of Famer, All-American, just absolute tackling machines, was the MVP of the Big Ten in 78. And was the 25th player to be named to the College Football Hall of Fame from Ohio State.
Ooh, well.
Ooh, fun fact. His last game was the Gator Bowl when Woody Hayes punched Charlie Bowman.
That's a good game.
No, it's not. Why would you say that?
It was a joke.
It is a good game. Great. Great game.
Well. I'm going to do a thing I don't know if I've done yet, and I'm not going to pick an Ohio State player in this draft.
Yeah, I took two of them.
You got one for me. How about that?
Just take AJ Hawk call today.
I thought about it. He's on my board here, but I'm going to take Patrick Willis instead.
He was actually on my list too.
Yeah, College Football Hall of Famer. SEC Defensive Player of the Year in 2006. Also won the Buckus Award. Two-time first-team All-American and two-time first-team All-SEC. So.
All right. I will round it out here with Derek Brooks from Florida State. Three-time first-team All-ACC, 1993 ACC Defensive Player of the Year, two-time consensus All-American, and a College Football Hall of Famer. So, yeah, Derek Brooks. I will go to the enemy and take a Florida State guy here to round it out. I ended up with 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7 on my big board. So I'll call it a successful draft for me.
I got all my players were in my own top 8, too. The only one that you stole from me was the Boz.
Well, you had the first pick.
I know.
Should have got the Boz.
Yeah, well, like I couldn't tell what was worth and what was not in this one. This one was tough.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really clear cut. It's just a lot of guys that are all very similarly good. Boz was really my first pick just because of how noteworthy he was. And
there's all them steroids.
Still sort of an icon, really. To an extent. It was a tough one. I mean, to go down, there wasn't a clear cut number one. And even when I pieced together my big board, it was kind of like, okay, here's five guys that are all very similar. Like, how do I want to spread them apart? So
your difference between 6 and 13, the gap is not that big.
Yeah. All right. What listener questions do we have?
So we've got three this week, all actually football related for the first time in a while. So we'll start with the one that we actually got first. Also, it'll be your favorite. This is from Aaron Prius. He said he's been seeing people project Brock Purdy, assuming for coming out next year, anywhere from first round to not even a top 10 quarterback. Where do you stand?
Well, everyone knows where I stand. I think right now he's probably the fourth best quarterback in the draft next year behind Lawrence, Fields, and Lance. You could also speculate Newman in there as well. But then again, the numbers, the way he's put up numbers at Iowa State, a place that traditionally doesn't do numbers like that. And if you watch him, he definitely has the mentality you kind of look for. A couple years ago, I heard somebody refer to him as sort of like a dollar store version of what Baker Mayfield did when he was at Oklahoma, really, with his ability, his size, all that. So that's kind of where I land on it. He'll probably stay number four. We'll kind of see as the season progresses. But I think he's a very talented quarterback, or else I wouldn't be all aboard the Purdy train, and having a Purdy party. So, that's my stance on it.
Even if he has an awful year, you're still going to be on the Purdy train.
100%.
Ride or die on the Purdy
train. I hitch my wagon to these quarterbacks and I stay with them for a lifetime. Look at me and Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. When's I think Brock Purdy's still pretty good. I think he is going to fight for the top spot in the Big 12 this year. I think, depending on Ellinger, I think Spencer Rattler could be up there as well. The rest of them, there's a lot of question marks throughout the Big 12, but Brock Purdy should be one of the top, in theory, two quarterbacks in the Big 12 this year without a question.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Gibble.
I feel like we've talked about We talked about before who has the best chance to knock off Oklahoma as the top spot. Like, if Oklahoma doesn't win the Big 12 this year, who's it going to be? I feel like Oklahoma State and Iowa State are both right in that running. And Iowa State's there because of Brock Purdy. I think he's got the talent to keep that team in the conversation, win them some games, and overall, like, he's probably like one of the bright spots on that team.
Yeah, I mean, he a big struggle they had early on last season was they had lost Hakeem Butler, and they had lost David Montgomery out of the backfield, and they didn't necessarily have a run game for the first couple games and stuff like that. Once the offense and the weapons around him kind of got situated, you saw them play a bit better down the stretch. You know, the comeback, sort of close comeback against Oklahoma and games like that. Charlie Kolar, the tight end, he's a projected fringe first round pick. Breece Hall, who did eventually come on last year, was very good as a freshman, and going into the season, that's going to help a lot. So I think the weapons around him early on this season are going to be a lot better than they were at the start of last season, which kind of knocked him down a peg. So I think it's a good season to get on the Brock Purdy party.
So the next question we have comes from Football Glory 20. He says, which teams do you think will be most impacted by reduced capacity for home games?
I honestly don't know. I don't know a way to really think about that outside of teams that might have smaller stadiums, but most of the top teams have big stadiums, so they're going to still be able to fill up, you know, the same amount of MAC team would, or something
like that. I think he's looking for like the home field advantage. Like, think of like Penn State and the whiteout. Like, you know, I think Penn State's one.
I understand the question. What I'm saying is it's hard to say that without knowing how many people are in the stadium, because that home field advantage goes away, but you know, these top teams still have big enough stadiums that there's going to be crowd noise. There's going to be people yelling. It's not, you know, you're not playing at Western Michigan Stadium or whatever, where you're going to have 20 people in the stands. So that's why I think it's a tough question to really look into. I mean, special environments like the whiteout, sure, probably, but on a standard week-to-week basis, these big stadiums are still going to have a decent amount of people filling them and being loud. So
I think that you're going to see it more in those like primetime matchups. So the whiteout game, Oregon, Ohio State, the Iron Bowl, some of the big premier matchups where those stadiums are absolutely packed, the players on the field can't hear themselves think. I think that's the time you're going to kind of see that the most. Losing that edge in those games is going to be a bigger factor than just kind of week in, week out. I don't think you're going to see it on an every week basis for every team. I mean, think about the whiteout. You have 110,000 people in that stadium for that game. Going down to 55,000, just for argument's sake, saying half capacity there, that sound difference is going to be a heck of a lot different. And Penn State uses that edge to get the leg up on Ohio State.
They literally made Michigan call a timeout for the first play last year.
Yeah. So things like that are where you're going to see it. But to say a team is going to be affected by it all season long, I don't think you're going to see that happen too much. To still have 50,000 people in the stands in some of these 100,000 capacity stadiums, even 40,000, that's still a lot of people that can make a lot of noise. So you're still going to have some sort of a home field advantage. It's just not going to be as deafening as it's been in the past for some teams.
Yeah, I agree with that. Those are prime time games. This is your huge matchups, but like when Georgia plays, you know, Georgia Southern or insert random school here, you know, Troy, it won't be that big of a factor. So the last question we have here is from Isaac Nelson, and it's pretty simple. Is can Jamie Newman handle the pressure?
I hope so, but going from Wake Forest to the smallest FBS school in terms of amount of students and stuff like that to Georgia, where it's going to be loud and raucous every week,
maybe
is quite the, well, yeah, I mean, but still in comparison to other teams, I mean, it's still, yeah, I mean, who knows, but I hope he does, but it is a giant step up in terms of what you're going to and from. But I'm rooting for him. I hope he succeeds there.
Honestly, the thought of having a half capacity for him is probably nice, because that'll probably be close to the amount of fans he was playing in front of for Wake Forest. Or at least closer. He's not going to have quite as much pressure in the game from those fans that are going to be reacting to everything. So that could help him out, honestly, in that scenario. But he's played in some big games, and I think he's showed up in most of those games. So I think he should handle it pretty okay.
He did really well against teams that were mediocre and struggled against really good teams like Clemson. So, I mean, he should have more talent at Georgia, so that should help as well. But I think it'll be a help for him if for some reason JT Daniels does not get cleared, because then he can go in just knowing he's the starter. Obviously, you want to have competition, iron sharpens irons, but the mentality of now I am the starter to I now need to go out and compete for it. Depends how he handles it, but I think he should be good. And once he kind of gets a couple games under his belt, it'll be interesting to see how he does when they get to a game like Alabama, which is early in the year. So that's all the listener questions we have for today.
All right. Well, that is it for our podcast this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks again with our draft finale, quarterbacks and running backs. And then we have some interesting stuff coming after that. And then soon enough, we'll be in preview mode, previewing college football in the upcoming season. Make sure you're following us on social media at Walk On Redshirts Podcast on Twitter. And I believe it's the Walk On Redshirts Podcast or the Walk On Redshirts on Instagram.
Yes.
And then also Half Hour Huddle, make sure you're following that on our YouTube channel, Walk On Redshirts Podcast, where Jake has been talking to ex-college football players of all kinds. Had a great interview with Colt Brennan that I believe dropped this past week, which is a good listen. One that I know everyone always brings up Colt Brennan when it comes to random ex-college football players and stuff like that. So make sure you check that out. Probably the biggest name that's been on there outside of Ricky Stanzi, of course.
Good old Ricky Stanzi.
So make sure you're checking that out on the YouTube channel, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode, guys.